Hey everyone, Pizza Mind here. I got some great news. This podcast has grown by leaps and bounds, and we have a big announcement to tell you in reaction to that growth. Bryce, what's going on?
Guys, we're leveling things up this year, guys. Starting the first week of January, okay? Starting the first week of January, we're changing the release schedule of the Crypto 101 podcast. So we're going to be releasing not one, but two episodes every single week in 2022. Okay, guys. So every Tuesday and every Thursday morning, you guys are going to be getting some brand new Crypto 101 content. And this begins Tuesday, January 4th. So mark your calendars for after the new year, guys. And per usual, episodes are going to still remain available wherever you listen to podcasts, along at crypto101podcast.com. And that's it, guys. And the reason really, you know, why we're doing this, it's crazy, but we've just, like Pizza Mind said, we've seen such enormous growth. We're getting inquiries, you know, literally like, you know, 50 to 100 every month for new guests to come on the show. Whereas back, you know, 2-3 years ago, we had to fight tooth and nail to get on top quality guests. And so it's just been an awesome, awesome period. And we're excited to dish up twice the amount of podcasts in the new year.
And this is our way of saying thank you to you guys for voting us best podcast in 2018, 2019, and 2020, according to the Blockchain Influencer Award. So thank you so much. We feel the love. We're going to give it back to you in 2022.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls around the world, gather around. We've got some very, very interesting things to talk about today. Unfortunately, I am not joined by my notorious co-host and companion and best friend, Mr. Aaron Pizza Mind Malone. He is, again, off in some distant land traveling, probably at a crypto conference somewhere in a household near you. But I am joined today by a fantastic guest, somebody who is on the forefront of the customer experience, I would say, on the forefront of building just a usable framework and a usable, you know, basically interface for crypto wallets. Okay, so if you guys are excited about crypto wallets, you will be very, very pleased to be listening to this interview with Rob Locascio, who is the founder and CEO of Live Person. Rob, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Bryce.
Yeah, man, we're really excited to dive into particularly, you know, why you decided to attack the crypto industry from this angle. You know, there's lots of problems to be solved. Why'd you choose this one?
Yeah, I've been in crypto for a little bit myself, for more than a little bit. And, you know, what I found is it's still what I call fairly, for the purist, I call it the purist and the tourist. There's an intersection going on right now. But if you look at like the MetaMask wallet and stuff like that, it's a little bit edges on the side of purists. But even beyond that, as we started to meet with, you know, a bunch of companies who've become customers, they were starting to go to traditional customer care. Like, if you have a problem, make a phone call, send it an email. And so, you know, I fundamentally believe that messaging and real time is really a Web3 communication. It should be the way that everything's done, even commerce. You know, when I think about, you know, OpenSea and just a giant website with, you know, thousands upon thousands of NFTs, it's like going back to 1995 and real time. And so the ability to bring like Discord and Twitter together with customer care and put it in with, you know, blockchain and crypto companies, this is kind of like what we're focused on. I just think the path should be a different path, using bots, automation, things like this.
Yeah. And there's one thing I want to hit on real quick. You said the purists and the tourists. And I think that's a great place to start, because that's really where the binary is, why there's so many issues here. Because we have the purists, guys like me and you, been in the crypto industry for, you know, half a decade now, and have been basically, you know, very, very convinced of like the thesis of like, you know, a sovereign individual. You want to hold your private keys. You don't want any custodian in between you and your money. Okay. And so that brings a lot of responsibility. That brings a lot of kind of technical prowess. And the 95% of people are probably the tourists, you know, maybe many of the Crypto 101 listeners who are here first, couple months or years in the space. They're on Coinbase. They don't really want to own their private keys. So there's this intersection. And so you're deciding in order to really, scale, in order to get to, billions of users, we need to come to people with an interface that makes sense. And so how is LivePerson doing this?
So first of all, the concept that one of the things we found, we started to have these dinners with many different crypto companies and with Consensus and Coinbase and stuff. But Consensus plays such a big part because obviously the MetaMask wallet is being used on many different protocols and dApps and things. And basically it was funny thing we found at these dinners was people are like, hey, MetaMask, I'm supporting your wallet because your wallet, people can't figure it out when they're connected to my service. And so one part is how do we create a community around answering questions? And then how do we embed into the wallet itself a way to ask those questions to get those questions answered? So it's kind of dual because
the reason why that doesn't exist now is because MetaMask, why is MetaMask not supporting them? Why are the wallets themselves not making this?
Right. So they're about to go live. They're going to support their wallet. They're going to make it easy to get care. We're going to put automation and bots and everything. But everyone's going to have a problem like this. Because everyone's a lot of these services are really interconnected. It's very different than the other world I live in, which is dealing with the T-Mobiles and Citibanks and companies like this, where they are walled gardens. This is a lot of interconnectivity. It's about the community working together. So what we're thinking about is actually ultimately creating a DAO, a customer service DAO, in which the agents and the bots are placed into the DAO. There's a mechanism to incentivize people to create these bots. And those bots may answer general questions like, how do I take fiat and transfer to crypto? My MetaMask wallet, how do I do something, change the chain? I want to use not Ethereum, I want to use something else. So I want to go to DAI. So these are the things that we're thinking about in changing how customer care can be done with this community, because it can't be done in a traditional way. But at least for now, in the MetaMask wallet, we're going to have care. You have a question, you're going to be there. You can ask a human, ask a bot. It'll all be fully integrated.
Very cool. Okay. So Rob, interesting. I'm glad we dove straight in, but now let's take a quick zoom out. So you mentioned some big names. You'd worked with, companies like Citibank in the past or whatever. Tell us a little bit about your background and why you are the guy to be building this type of service.
I'm in a Web 1 world.
Web 1 guy.
I'm Web 1. 95, I started my company. 97, I invented chat. I invented web chat. So if you ever chatted on a website, I invented this technology, filed the first patents, took the company public in 2000. And forever, I've been on a mission to provide what I call conversational AI, conversational commerce, conversational care. It's what I believe is all the real-time aspects that we like about messaging our friends and family. And once again, what we see on Discord and all this, how do you create an experience for care around that? And how do you bring automation to it? And so 5 years ago, we made a big pivot into messaging, a big pivot into conversational AI bots. And, we're leading in that effort. So we've got 10,000 customers, and then my personal, belief in crypto and blockchain and DAOs, and we could talk about that a little bit, and how that's our future of platforms. I don't think the platforms we're on right now in Web 1 and Web 2 are really serving us as a community, as humans. And I think what the people are trying to solve in crypto is things about privacy, centralization of power. These are things that I believe I want to help support. And we're big enough, we're a $3.5 billion company and we have resources and yet we're not about centralized power. I'm not living with the people who sort of won the current version of the web. I believe there's a better path.
Wow. That's fascinating. Tell us a little bit about just from an inventor's standpoint, what it was like, what went into the conceptualization of web chat for, you bringing that to everybody who uses it in 7 billion phones around the world.
Yeah. Now it's billions and billions of conversations happen. It's kind of like what today is. I remember, we could take the parallel. I went to Dell's website. This is in 97. I was building websites myself to make some money. And then I remember shopping on Dell's website, configuring a server. I couldn't get it done. So then I had to hang up my dial-up connection, dial-up back then, call on a phone. And I thought, this sucks. Like, I should be able to ask a question at the point of need. And chat had existed in different systems, but never on the web for customer care. And that's what drove me to it. It's the same thing I see today. If you think about like NFT marketplaces, there's the marketplace itself, and it's a web user experience. Then there's Discord and Twitter, which are real-time messaging platforms. And there's a disconnect between all of it. So I may connect with the artist somewhere, or I may tweet and say, make it back to me, or I may be on Discord with the community. But wrapping the community around the actual digital asset is where I believe it should be. And so it's always what I felt. And I feel like this version of the web should not go backwards and go to web. I don't even know why people are using HTML. Like, it makes no sense to use HTML to provide digital assets and a marketplace for them. It just beguiles me.
And what's the substitute to HTML, would you say?
It's what we see. It's conversational commerce, like a marketplace where the NFT is wrapped around the messaging framework. The community is asking questions. They're communicating with each other around that asset. The buying is right in there. The artist could be there. It's all transacted and communicated and supported, and also connect my wallet, because I'm having a problem connecting my wallet. All of that needs to be connected into a single flow. We built a platform called Maven, which is a consumer platform, and I'm moving it towards crypto. Right now, it has about 1,000 merchants to do just what I said, full inline conversational commerce. But I want to put NFTs on there. We're going to add other digital assets. This is kind of what I see is the form factor, not the web, not HTML.
Wow. Very interesting. So could we kind of get to a couple best practices, I would say, for, because I think the main thing that I think that people kind of hear is, you know, the attack here would be like phishing attacks, right? A lot of people say like, oh, you know, I've got, someone sends me an email, customer support from Coinbase, you click it and you give them your private key. So like, what are kind of the main frictions with the customer right now? Can you kind of talk about it from that angle?
Yeah, the main friction is there's unsecure channels,
right,
that they're being communicated care conversations in. So,
and they're about very sensitive things. You know, your money at the end of the day.
It's your money. So, like, if I talk to all these companies, they tell me the same story. Somebody tried to spoof a customer care rep. Someone created a bot that represented it. You know, our company. And they're trying to get the keys out of the person. And even they're building trust by doing help and care, making like they work at the company just to build the trust to say, like, give me your password and username and give me your keys.
Social
and this is happening. Social engineering. And it's money. If it wasn't money at the end of the road, it could be $10,000. It could be $1,000. It could be millions of dollars in these wallets, where that's an incentive to play a game. Hmm. We have to have authenticated channels. And that authentication has to be the bots authenticated and the humans are authenticated in this thing. And without that, you know, people are very, there's a group of people who are very devious, who all day are trying to figure out how to get that information. And as I said, as the tourists come on, you know, we could say, like, why do you ever give your keys out? Well, purists gave their keys out. There are times where purists gave their key thinking that the person they were talking to needed it to troubleshoot something on a wallet. And so this is a fact. So the tourist is definitely going to be doing this in mass.
Yeah.
And that'll ruin it, because there's already a lack of trust a little bit by the tourist about how does all this work? Who's behind it? Can I even talk to somebody? So I think the ability to build real trust will enable hundreds of millions of people to come on board and feel like they're really being supported.
So how does LivePerson kind of approach or interact with other projects, decentralized finance DAOs, right? So does LivePerson get connected by somebody in the community? Is LivePerson a DAO in and of itself? Is there a governance process that kind of occurs here? And just kind of walk us through, maybe even some people's like, Bryce, what's a DAO? This is my first time on a crypto podcast. You know, why don't we break it down?
So a DAO is a decentralized autonomous organization. And obviously, what it means is that, and I think the easiest way to explain it is if you look at Bitcoin, Bitcoin is one of the biggest brands in the world right now, $1 trillion worth of value. And when you look at that brand, there's no CEO, there's no head of marketing, there's no centralized group, there's no stock listed on some centralized exchange. Yet there are hundreds of thousands of people that are engaged in this business. And as they do good work, in this case, mining, as they do good work, they get an incentive, they get a coin, which then is tradable on an exchange, which allows them to live and make money. And people have made millions of dollars and billions of dollars. And there's, right. So it's, think of it, all this wealth that was created without a centralized, you know, hierarchical corporation, which is the first time in history. So the DAO is just that. It's it, the concept is that we can run organizations that are about a community of people coming together, build the incentives into the work that people are doing, and but they're not on payroll. They don't have managers. And the manager is a piece of technology. It's a piece of code that says, if you do your work, you get paid out for doing it. And it, and there's no art. There's, it's trustless. That's what you
run
know, the word
by
trustless.
An algorithm just, that everybody agrees on. It's an,
open algorithm. It's not even closed. You can look at it and see, like, let me look at the code and see if that makes sense to me, how I'm going to get paid. So I just think if you look at what's happened in the last 2 years with the COVID and what's happened with employees and the change in people's mindset, they want to work in a DAO. People want to work in a DAO. And then I'll take it one step further. We're a public company listed on NASDAQ, but and we're our value, our market cap's based on the fact of our sales, our revenue, and our earnings, our EBITDA, how much cash we make or don't. And there's a multiple applied to that. But if you look at these decentralized organizations, it's not about a centralized revenue model. It's about how much wealth has been created between all the thousands and tens of thousands of people or hundreds of thousands of people that are involved with the community, you know, in making the system work. And that's so I could see a world in which coin market cap, token market cap becomes market cap even on an exchange like NASDAQ. Like a company like mine, if we became a DAO, we would have to decentralize our software, we would have no employees, we would decentralize our revenue, but the value could still be based on all the money we're creating for the world around us. And that's what people want. People want.
And you think it's going
companies
that way?
Yeah, because I think people want companies to be communities. They want companies to be communities. We want our companies to be we want them to take on social issues and everything else, but it's hard to do.
This is coming from the CEO of a $3.5 billion company, guys. So if you guys are thinking crypto is not here and institutions aren't coming, no, they're here. They've arrived. And if you're not already in crypto, I mean, you're late to the game. That's what I think. Everybody listening at home. Rob, this is... You know, this is a conversation I want to kind of dive a little bit more into. What would that look like? CEO of a public company going to your board and saying, guys, let's decentralize this thing. What are some of the resistances that you might run into?
Well, I think to just take the company wholesale, decentralize it, right? It would be a process. I think the first thing you have to do is create a decentralized service. So for instance, if let's say we invented Ethereum. Let's just go back and just say we invented Ethereum exactly the way Ethereum is today. And let's say the company has 20% of the treasury. So we did an ICO, we issued the coins. There's a whole protocol on how people get the coins and trade them and then get them for their work, for proof of work, for proof of stake, where it's going. But we would keep our 20%, and that 20% would be 20% of obviously hundreds of billions of dollars of value. And then what could happen is that would basically be an asset that the shareholders would say, wow, that's worth, let's say you're worth, the core is worth 3.5, but that thing you created called Ethereum is worth 200 billion. They're going to market. Just think if that was the case, we invented Ethereum, our company would be Ethereum. Right. Our market cap wouldn't be 3.5 billion. It would be, you know, a trillion, it'd be 300 billion. Right. So I don't think it's such a stretch. It's just a process. But even shareholders are looking for, like they call, you know, environmental focus. They want you to be socially good, ESG, environmentally and socially good. There's a whole thing about it. It's harder to do that as a centralized force. but is decentralized, we could do a lot of things that would align to helping people, helping the community, you know, helping a broader group. That's where I think it's going to happen. I believe in, it'll probably be 20 years from now, but the public markets will reflect coin market caps and centralized organizations will go to DAOs. My children who are 3, 5, and 9 months years old will not be working in a centralized company. They will be working in a DAO. There's no way when they grow up, are they going to go and do that? I don't see it.
That is so cool. Many of you have probably heard about how the market for collectibles, including NFTs, has gone totally crazy over the last year. And the problem, though, is that even if you wanted to invest in some of these assets, the price tags are simply out of reach for most investors. But there's actually solutions to this problem. And I wanted to tell you about one of those right now. So this podcast is sponsored by Otis. Otis is an investment platform that makes it possible for almost anyone to invest in shares of cultural assets. So here's how it works. You download their app and you sign up for free. They have over 100 items available for you to invest in, from rare collectibles like sports cards, comics, and video games to NFTs, contemporary art, and even rare sneakers. Shares usually start around 10 bucks. Plus, they add new assets every week. Then you can earn a potential return if Otis sells the underlying assets for more than the price the item was dropped at, or by selling your shares to other Otis members on Otis's real-time trading platform. So some of the drops from Otis are amazing. These things are like sports cards and memorabilia, like a ticket to the Kobe Bryant's final NBA game, or a bunch of boxed, never opened vintage video games like the original Game Boy, Pokemon games. And as a music lover, to be honest, I was excited to see an actual first generation, brand new first generation iPod. So if products like this sound up your alley, well, right now, Otis is offering listeners of this show a free share when they fund their account. And all you have to do is go to withotis.com/crypto101 and sign up to get your first share for free. That is with Otis, withotis.com/crypto101. For more risks and disclaimers, go to withotis.com/legal/disclaimer. And please check out the show notes for those as well. So, you know, would you ever find a use or a possibility to bring on a crypto asset to your balance sheet? What would be a reason to do something like that? Not saying you will, just theoretically, what would be the purpose?
We're definitely down the road on that. We also have a bank. We built a conversational AI bank called Bella. And that bank we put into place 9 months ago. It's riding off of traditional fiat rails, but we are going to add crypto into that, and we're going to add the crypto rails into that and other things.
That's
so
fantastic.
The reason I believe in this is that I go back to our MetaMask thing.
Yeah.
I believe that the world will be going this way, and the crypto world is leading us now. So even how we think about customer care, we're thinking about customer care as a DAO. This is what we've been talking about as a group. Like, these are things that we can create with this world that the rest of the world will follow. Like, having a giant contact center with 20,000 people in it doesn't make sense if you could have a decentralized way in which those people are living anywhere, they're plugging in, they're creating bots, they're getting paid for the work they do, and not sitting in a contact center being, you know, managed top down. So I think this world is a world of our future. And that's why, as for my company, and we've always been about innovation, we've got to be a part of that, but also we've got to drive it. We have to drive our part of it authentically.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's really what I'm doing. I respect the people who are involved with it. And I'm a learner. I'm not here like from web one trying to drive to web three. Like, we're not trying to be Meta.
Mm.
You know, we're not trying to create a meta, like, now we're the metaverse company. And we're going to do that because we feel threatened. I don't see that as a future for Facebook. It's they're centralized power.
You know, it almost feels to me like more of a Jack Dorsey approach with Twitter, you know, how he is on Twitter with, you know, NFT authentication, right? That's going to be part of their process. He's hiring people to, you know, head crypto. They're bringing Bitcoin onto their balance sheet and all that kind of stuff. And so it seems more of like that approach, like an adapt rather than impose.
That's right. And I've been spending time with like guys like Joe Lubin, Consensus, and I've been spending time with, I had Anthony Dorio on my podcast. I have my own podcast called Over the Wall to help entrepreneurs. And I was at LizCon. I'm diving in. Like I, you know, you gotta have like first knowledge, you know, it's first principles. You have to be in it before you make a decision on how to be in it. And so what I've done is just spend as much time as I can to understand what's our place in it. How can we help it grow? I, you know, how do we not an impediment to it? And how do we align to the values of it? Like you have to respect the values, like through community, you gain sovereignty. Mm-hmm. That's how I look at it. The sovereign individual was kind of the version one from my perspective of blockchain and crypto. And we're up to which more is like through community, we gain sovereignty. It's not just about sovereignty. It's about, I'm going to be part of a community to get it. Where I think at the beginning, it was more like government sucks. I get to like have my money here. I can be anywhere. I can avoid taxes. There's a major shift that's gone on. And what you meet is people who want to create community, and they're building blockchain technologies around a community of people. Yeah. So, but the things that are bad right now, not bad, but like we're a public company. So we understand a security, like a stock is a security, handing stock options out, RSUs, being on an exchange, not non-public information. We actually know all the rules and regulations because we've been doing it for 20 years. So when we go to do our thing, we'll do it with the filter of, we know this could be a security, you know, unless you're a true DAO, which let's say we're a true DAO, that's something else. But even with that, we can take our perspective on what it's like running a public company so we can give it some weight and some trust, maybe greater trust.
Awesome. So let's shift gears a little bit more specifically towards DeFi. Is that something that you're giving a lot of credence to? I know you guys are building more with Ethereum than you probably are with Bitcoin. Is that because of any particular reason?
Well, I mean, I'm looking at a couple of chains, so I'm not particularly married. Like we're looking at our DAO, like I said, a separate project that we have out in the market. We're going to look at creating a decentralized service for it. But I've been looking at different things outside Definity. I've been looking at stuff even outside of Ethereum because of the cost of Ethereum. But obviously that's going to change next year. But we've been looking at what chain should we use, what would be best serving us to create our DAO and to create our system. So I've been going down that road. We're getting closer to where we think we'll go. But Bitcoin's not, I mean, right now, even Bitcoin, we want to have a way in which a consumer can pay in the merchant marketplace with crypto, but we'd rather use stablecoin, USDC, or you know, something that it doesn't have a taxable event to it. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of mechanics to it that we're working through right now. But I think Bitcoin's a great investment. I don't know about using it as a currency, you know, because today the taxable events on, at least here in the US.
Yeah, fantastic. And then with you know, decentralized finance, is there any sort of like valuation metrics that you find particularly compelling? And I know earlier in the show you mentioned it's not about revenues, it's not about that, it's more about the users and the adoption. So how do you actually, you know, rationalize sometimes quote unquote some of these valuations, I suppose?
You know, it's I think the what's cool about crypto is that, you know, in the social media world, the like was the currency, right? In crypto, the transaction is the currency. Like right. Everything has a transaction on it. Mm-hmm. And I think you have to look at how many transactions are created with whatever time frame you're measuring. What's the value of those transactions? How much money was transacted around that? It could be even votes. Maybe it's a voting protocol. So maybe it's not money all the time, but like, and then it's what's the active community. So like how many people are involved with this thing? And then how many people are growing each day against it? So I think it's very close to normal metrics. The biggest metric is that the there's no centralization. So there's not a revenue model per se. There could be all the money that's transacted. And I think there'd be a multiple on what the value of that to the community is. Mm-hmm. So, because if you step back, really step back, what is a valuation?
It's subjective, I guess. It's one person's perception versus another's, I suppose, right?
We have analysts that write about our stock. Oh, they're trading at a good moment. A lot of them are saying we're undervalued. Some are saying you're over. We have shareholders show up and say, you're way undervalued. We have some shareholders that show up and say, you're overvalued.
Relative to what, right? It's always relative to what?
Relative to what? It's they have their own model. So what happens is that eventually there's some model that everyone has for a sector. So I'm in the cloud computing sector, and there's a model of revenue
multiples. Agreed upon sort of model. Consensus.
I don't know where it came from. Yeah, that's okay. Now there's this rule of 40. There's this thing called the rule of 40. If you get top line growth above 20% and bottom line above 20%, 20 plus EBITDA margins are 20%, 20 plus 20 equals 40. So you could do 40% growth and zero margin or 30% growth. But if you rule of 40 used to be the rule. And if you can add up 40 between top line growth and bottom line growth, you're in the magic 10x your multiples of your revenue. That doesn't hold now anymore. I've seen it personally.
You're like, I've seen that shit break down.
Like we had the rule of 40 and we didn't get those high multiples. We still traded a very good multiple, but we're not trading where the top person is. The top company is trading double us. So why? It's a lot of factors. And so I think it's the same thing. Once there's usually an expert who everyone follows, most people, and they say, this is the multiple, this is the thing. And everyone goes, that's what it should be judged at. They're an expert.
Yeah.
And then the market starts to happen and everyone says, okay, that makes sense. And it's crazy. It doesn't make sense.
You know? Yeah. Markets aren't really rational. It's like, you know, you have the Shiller or you'll have valuation or, you know, we're all going to go over the CAPM and like, that's the Bible. And then, but boom, it's like the valuations need to adapt. And with the world becoming increasingly, you know, more complex with all these, you know, blockchains and communication systems, it's going to be crazy to see how things really turn out. But Rob, I'm really curious, before we, you know, dive into some closing questions, let's take a look at just, your roadmap here. Maybe the MetaMask partnership or any next, big announcements coming up.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, that's a big one and that's going to bring a community together, I think, around what we're doing. It's really about, you know, I believe conversations create the most personalized experiences in the world, whether you're going into a store or you're in digital. Obviously, I live in the digital world. We want to create very high quality, high value, and we've built a platform over the last 5 years to do that. It looks at the intent of the consumer, allows you to build high quality bots, deploy them, watch them. It has tools that tells you if it's negative or positive sentiment happening. So there's a lot of tooling. The thing is, I really believe that the automation is what's going to win it here. You won't have a lot of humans, and there's a lot of technical people in this world right now who can build these automations. And I think what we need to look for is that bots are powering the care and commerce experiences, and that's going to change the scale at which people will buy and be serviced on these platforms. So where we're looking to do, especially with starting with consensus, is like, how much of that can we automate high quality? We're going to do a lot of that. How's that consumer experience? How do we tie that into other, you know, places that the wallet's being used and connecting all those dots? So it's an exciting time because the connection between the dots will also be a different thing. Like we're thinking if let's say somebody else on their dApp, you know, they take in a question for MetaMask, we can route it. It gets routed to the MetaMask bot. Mm-hmm. So we look at the intent. Hey, that's a MetaMask question. That's not, you know, Uniswap. Let's move that over here and let's answer that. So that's the kind of thing that we're going to create. A lot more routing, a lot more looking at the intents and how do we move them to different people's bots. And that's why we're thinking more of this decentralized marketplace where consumers can come and just ask any question around anything, around any of these companies. And they're all participating in the marketplace. That's kind of the dream I have of this.
That's fantastic. Yeah, that's going to be super fascinating. We're really excited to see how it plays out because I think that, you know, in order to get this industry to where everybody collectively wants it, we just need the interfaces to be better. And for the interfaces to be better, there needs to be a viable feedback loop kind of between the customer and the builders. And right now, it does seem like there's a communication breakdown. So we're glad that you're helping us patch things up. And we're really excited to keep tabs on it. But before we let you go, you know, if this is the first podcast that somebody is listening to, has, you know, they just learned about crypto, this is their first one, what's one word of advice, one word of wisdom from a guy who's been, you know, starting your research and in this place?
I mean, on crypto in general?
Yeah.
I'm onboarding friends like all the time. I'm literally like the onboarder of friends. Like literally I'm onboarding. I spend like 2 hours setting them up and everything. It's like getting them trading, getting them a MetaMask wallet. I mean, it's like, it's fine. So if you do the same thing, you know, we're shepherds, you know, we're like shepherding people on.
Yeah, we both shepherds, have podcasts, I mean, right?
Yeah, exactly. You're like,
we're both running, you know, multi-billion-dollar companies. Oh, wait, I'll get there.
That's like, okay. I started sleeping on a couch. And, you know, broke is how I started in 1995. So, I'm not an overnight success. It just takes time. You know what I'm saying? It took time, and, I'm happy where we are, but the bottom line is what I would say is, there's a rabbit hole you're going to go down and you should go down it, and it's going to mess with your brain. Okay. Because your brain has been given structures, parent, child. You know, it's wherever religion you're in, there's the religion in you. You know, there's God in you. There's the government, the president, and you. There's your teachers and your principals and you. And all those structures are about these hierarchy between parent and child. They're parent and child structures. When you go down the rabbit hole in crypto, it's hard to understand because you don't see a parent and you don't see a child. You just see a community of people. And that's very hard for us to understand because we want accountability because we believe accountability is in a parent-child relationship. When I was in trouble, I could ask my parents for help. When I was in school, my teacher told me I was doing right or wrong. When I'm at work, my boss said that I'm doing right or wrong and I get a bonus based on it. If you go into this other world, you're like, where's the parent-child relationship? And that's scary because you start to think, well, this has to be something that's going to steal my money. If there's no parent or child, I got no one to get beat up and I got no one to beat up. Like, you know, I got, so who do I go to when there's a problem? What do I do? And you have to just kind of roll with it and say it's trustless. We unfortunately rely too much in the real world with the trust of people and they let us down. And if a piece of code is doing the arbiter, it will take care of us. And I'll tell you a great example of this. I don't know if, I think some people understood, but back in May, obviously the market cracked and about a half a billion came out of the market. You know, Bitcoin, Ethereum, everything. When we were all part of that, I felt nauseous, you know, during that 1 week period of time. But what the bigger point is, a half a billion came out of the market and there wasn't a bailout of a bank or a hedge fund that everyone's like writing about. My God, the hedge fund lost 50 billion and they're going to pull down the system and someone's stepping in to save them. There was nothing. No one wrote about it. No one said anything. The machines took care of the transactions.
Yeah.
There was collateral against the borrowing. There was stuff happening and that's trustless. Trust is somebody calls on a Friday and says, look, the market's cracking. Give me till Monday. I'm going to do something. I'm going to liquidate my assets. Please give me till Monday. And there's a trust factor that's usually broken and that's how things happen. Like bankers making up stories that they can save their businesses. And in the end, they need the government to bail them out. They're, you know, they're telling me, give me more time. But that's not going to happen in this world. So you have to let go of the child parent. You have to get into it, buy some coin, get into a DAO, you know, and see what you can do. Like go to Pool Together. Pool Together, I think, is one of the coolest DAOs. You pool your money. And it's a lottery on winning the interest rate
a
no of your
loss
money.
Lottery.
No loss lottery. A no loss lottery.
You
which
don't
I
win,
think
you
is
get
amazing.
Your money back, right?
That's what you know. And most lotteries, like you know, the guy Leighton, the guy who started it. I met him at LizCon. I was talking to him. He's like, most lottery. It's like $80 billion is spent on lotteries, but that's all principal money. People's hard-earned money goes away on the ticket. Yeah. They lose their principal, and they need the principal. So here you keep your principal, and it's a DAO, and you're sharing in the profits. Mm-hmm. So go to something like that and go, how does that exist? And who runs this thing? You know, and then why am I making money? So I think you have to kind of suspend reality a little bit and put as much money as you can to feel comfortable, you know, and then just get into it. But you'll do well with it if you hold it over time.
Love it, Rob. That's a perfect way to end this thing. Thank you so much for your time. And we hope to have you back on again soon, one of these days with some more info.
Great. Thanks for having me, Bryce. I appreciate it.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.
Save big this holiday season. All in the Kroger app.
Buy two, get three free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Then get a flavorful Kroger spiral sliced ham for 89 cents a pound with an additional $25 purchase. Limit two, all with your card.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.